All right, take your Bibles tonight to the book of Proverbs. We're actually going to read in verse 16 to begin tonight, just a minute or two. Not really going to review or say a whole lot to tie this in with the previous weeks. You know what the study has been about. You know where we've been. You know what we've been doing. You know the importance of it, no doubt, given that the Lord has preserved to us an entire book of wisdom. We see the benefit of it in our lives so much and so often. And we see the various topics that Solomon has already brought to our attention are so on point for our lives today, so transformational, so such a blessing to us as we put them into practice and as we observe them in our lives. Tonight we want to talk about or look at Proverbs that deal with strife or contention, with peaceableness or strife. The primary subject of these Proverbs tonight is going to be contention and strife, that is, disputes and conflicts between individuals that cause discord. These things happen. As we often say, you get more than one person together, you have disagreement, because none of us are the same. We all have differences of opinion. We all have differences of preference. We all have differences of practice. All of those things are true every single time that we're together as a church. But again, applying this not only to church, to our relationships, that is also true of you and your spouse. You have differences of opinion, different preferences, different practices perhaps, though those things should come into alignment with one another over the course of time, you're still going to find yourself in times where there is strife or in times where there's disagreement. And so these Proverbs that we will look at this evening speak to the fact that these disputes, that these conflicts, this discord that is such a part of our human existence are often stirred, meaning that something that gets worked up, something that gets provoked, something that gets prolonged within us. And we all can remember those kinds of situations happening in our lives, in our church, and our relationships, at work, whatever it is. You find people and come across people in your life that desire to always stir the pot, so to speak. They always desire to rile people up, to get a reaction out of people. Sometimes they do it just for fun. Other times, of course, out of malice. But yet we see that often those times come and that it is stirred, worked up, it's incited, it is manufactured and continually fed, if you will, over the course of time. It's also seen in these Proverbs as something that is sown. We see that here in Proverbs 16:28. Proverbs 16:28, a froward man soweth strife. A froward man soweth strife, and a whisperer separateth chief friends. Strife can be something that is sown, meaning that you might seem to be an innocent party, bystander, neutral, not involved, but yet you're the one that has sown the seed that has brought discord within the body or within a relationship. You have that ability. We all have that ability, and we need to be careful in that. And these Proverbs will speak to that, teach us about that. That's a seed that can be planted, and when it's watered, when it is bearing fruit, it's very destructive, very divisive, very disruptive in the work of the Lord, something that is caused or created, brought about. We also see in chapter 26, in verse number 21, that it is something that is kindled or set fire to. And here we find a connection to our words, our mouth, our tongue that we've spent the last couple of weeks looking at. James chapter 3 talked about the tongue and said, what a fire. It really is a danger that setteth on fire, the world around us. And so we see this is the same. Proverbs 26 and verse number 21. As coals are to burning coals and wood to fire, so is a contentious man to kindle strife. Burning coals, wood. He's talking about, picture charcoal. Charcoal grill. Picture a campfire. What is that? That's a source. A source of fuel to burn. And you need that. You've got to have that coal. You've got to have that wood in order to burn, in order to make the fire. You got to have a couple other components too. But you have to have that or else it will go out. I mean, notice in verse 20, it says, where no wood is, there the fire goeth out. So where there is no talebearer, the strife ceaseth. So where there is no source, where there is no, nothing feeding it, it'll dissipate. But as it says here in verse number 21, so is a contentious man to kindle strife. He feeds the fire. He fans the flame. He provides the fuel to continue the burning, to continue the destruction that strife brings. And this is something that, again, as we've tried to point out every week, we're not talking about only the difference of saved and lost, though you do see a marked difference in how saved and lost people behave. We understand that we, as children of God, can act wisely or foolishly, really at any time. And we can either gender strife in our relationships, we can sow those seeds, or we can act wisely and reap the benefits. And so we need to be of a mind that we are not going to put fuel on the fire, that we are not going to kindle strife in the world around us. And if more people had that mentality, what a different society we would have today. There would be a whole lot of things that would be out of business. There'd be a lot of social media that'd be out of business. A lot of news reports and news programs be out of business. There'd be a lot of journalists or so-called journalists out of business. Politicians too, for that matter, because they thrive on that strife. And when you're talking about a church setting, when somebody plants themselves in the church, when somebody, maybe they have been added by the Lord, but they get backslidden or away, they are in a very good position to cause that strife, to plant those seeds or to fuel those flames when they do arise. It doesn't take very much. And when they do that, they sort of make a living off of that, if you will. And pastors can tell stories over the course of time about people in their churches, from years ago, that's what they did. They caused strife. That's what their aim and their goal was. But a person of wisdom, on the other hand, does not seek to stir, to sow, or to kindle competition or strife or contention. But they always seek to avoid the things that would cause that kind of strife. Now, sometimes people in that are using that kind of wisdom, they're thought of as weak. Because, well, they don't want any kind of confrontation. They're not going to stand up for anything. That's not the case at all. This is all about applying godly wisdom to avoid destructive contention, destructive strife, destructive stirring of the emotions. These contentions and disputes are a breeding ground for that which is dangerous and destructive. Flip over to 1 Timothy chapter 6. It's a breeding ground, which means that the strife can grow very quickly. You know, it doesn't take very long at all to spread discontent from one person to another. It doesn't take very long to sow that seed of strife or fan the flame for it to burst and forth and grow. And all of a sudden, there's more than one person now that's not happy. Or more than one person that's sowing those seeds continually. 1 Timothy chapter 6, verse 3. He ends verse 2 by saying, "These things teach and exhort. If any man teach otherwise, and consent not to wholesome words, even the words of our Lord Jesus Christ, to the doctrine which is according to godliness, he is proud." That is the person that would teach otherwise, "knowing nothing, but doting about questions and strifes of words, whereof cometh envy, strife, railings, evil surmisings, perverse disputings of men, of corrupt minds, and destitute of the truth, supposing that gain is godliness. From such withdraw thyself." And pointing out the end of verse number 5 is so important. "From such withdraw thyself." Does it say contend with them? Prove them that they're wrong, rebuke their words or contest their words. No, it says withdraw from them. Why? Because it's not profitable. And the situation that you're in there cannot improve until that person has a change of heart, until they are saved or until they are brought back to the truth and get right with God. And so from such withdrawal, and you have to, you see things in situations unfold like that. You want to help, you want to be a blessing. But when they get to a certain point, they just have to be withdrawn from. Talks about railings and evil surmisings, and that would be conjecture, speculations, assumptions, imaginations. I mean, as a church body, we are all entitled to, how we believe, what we practice, all those kinds of things. In other words, I can't demand of you that you do this or else you're not part of the church. The only way that we can is if the church itself has set through its constitution and said these parameters must be met. But as far as other things, we can't. But if you use those things that you believe, those pet doctrines, those things of importance to you, if you use that to sow discord in the body, if you use that to sow discontentment or conjecture or speculation, if you use it to cause confusion and stir up strife, then there's a major problem. That which was minor in your life has now become a major difficulty. And then, of course, the church must put one out in that situation with that, with that going on. There's a lot of things in our personal lives that we either decide we will do, participate in, or not. There are convictions that we all hold for how we educate our children, how we dress, where we go, where we don't go, how we talk, how we don't talk, the company we keep. All those things, we make personal applications outside of the body. And as long as we are not, breaking the covenant of the church or the constitution of the church, that's fine. But the minute that we take those things and we say, well, you're not as good because you do this, or look at me, I'm better than you, or why aren't you doing it this way? This is the way it has to be. Then there's a major problem, and that's where strife really sets in and becomes something that has to be dealt with. And so because of the danger and the destruction that contention can cause, the Word of God teaches that we should live peaceably. With all men, look at Romans chapter 12. That we should live peaceably with all men. Now, I know that this is a study of Proverbs. We'll get back to the Proverbs in just a minute. But we see the importance of this all throughout the Word of God. And it teaches us here that we are to live peaceably with all men. Romans 12, verse number 18. If it be possible, as much as lieth in you, live peaceably with all men. Dearly beloved, avenge not yourselves, but rather give place unto wrath, for it is written, vengeance is mine, I will repay, saith the Lord. Live at peace. Be peaceable. It means that we should not be looking for contention. We should not be desiring strife. Debate has to happen sometimes. We're, as a church, deciding what to do about a missionary. We did about ending support of one, about work, about different things. Debate has to happen, but that doesn't have to be contentious. Some people thrive off of the contention of debate or off of the strife that it brings to separate people away from each other. We should not abide that in our church, and that certainly is a problem even in our homes as well. God commands us to be peacemakers in Matthew 5 and the Beatitudes. In Jude, in verse number 3, he tells us that we are to earnestly contend for the faith. Yet as we do, we are not to become contentious or provoking. We must not contend about things that are not profitable. One more scripture here in the New Testament, 2 Timothy chapter 2. We talked about this a little last week when we talked about the proverb that said, answer a fool or don't answer a fool. And I used the example about the angels dancing on the head of a pin and how that's foolish. And, that's a great example of the strife that we're talking about. People would say, well, you need to take a position. Tell me, is it this way or that? Well, 2 Timothy chapter number 2, Verse number 14 has an answer for us on this. Of these things, put them in remembrance, charging them before the Lord. Now, that sounds pretty important, doesn't it? Charging them before the Lord that they strive not about words to no profit, but to the subverting of the hearers. That they strive not about words to no profit. This means that we should make very good use of our time, of our words, and not gender strife among one another just for strife, just for arguing, just to make ourselves feel important or whatever the case may be. Now go back to Proverbs. Let's go through these Proverbs like we did with the tongue or our mouth. We spent a few minutes even in the New Testament looking at the proof, looking at what the Bible has to say. Now let us glean quickly as we move through these Proverbs what the wisest man that has ever lived learned about strife. And you would have to admit that as you've grown over the course of time and matured, you see the wisdom. You see the wisdom in staying away from strife. Proverbs 10 and verse number 12. Proverbs 10, verse number 12. Hatred stirreth up strifes, but love covereth all sins. A spirit of hatred has a tendency to provoke and to entice strife. Strife, of course, can be conflict or friction, disagreement and discord. It can be any type of those kinds of feelings, even if it's not spoken in words. Just entering into someone's presence and there's just a real incompatibility there because of something that has transpired or happened. And we need to be very careful not to have those kinds of feelings, not to have that kind of environment. This hatred not only stirs up strife, but it keeps it alive. This hatred focuses on something that either is true or it's false, could go either way, but they fixated on that one point, upon that one thing. They've twisted it and turned it in their mind to make it seem like an attack upon themselves. And now that hatred of that one thing has turned into strife between brethren or strife between husband and wife. Something that perhaps was forgiven long ago. And yet it still hangs on, can stir up strife if there is hatred involved. It is, of course, the devil's work. It's condemned. On the other hand, here in verse 12, it tells us that love covereth all sins. Love desires to overlook. One of the greatest graces we can give to one another is to overlook the faults. To overlook the things that are either said wrong or we hear wrong. To forgive when others do wrong. Love is forgiving. Love is forbearing. The wise individual will cultivate love rather than hatred, because hatred leads to strife. If we go about hating, and it may not be a hatred of one individual, but hating life, hating some other particular thing outside, it will gender strife. I mean, we need to be passionate about the issues of our day. We need to be in prayer for them. But the minute we develop hatred, throwing out an example here randomly, the minute we develop hatred for, say, the gay community, strife, contention. And we are going to be very limited in how effective we can be and apply that across the board. And so this applies to every facet of our life. The wise individual will cultivate love rather than hate. Go to chapter 13 in verse number 10. As you might imagine, pride has something to do with this, as pride has had something to do with much of the things, or many of the things, that Solomon has brought out in his teaching us about wisdom. Chapter 13, verse 10, only by pride cometh contention, but with the well-advised is wisdom. Pride here is being a know-it-all, having an arrogance, thinking that perhaps you can't be taught, that there's nothing for you to learn or discover, that no one else has anything to add that has any value. And that's contrasted here with the well-advised, but with the well-advised is wisdom. The well-advised would be the opposite of pride, Someone who has enough humility to say, well, you know, I think I know what I'm doing here, but I don't know everything. Let me hear what somebody else has to say. You know, they believe this or they find this to be important. Let me hear what they have to say. You know, listening does not mean that you are in agreement with what somebody has to say. Listening doesn't mean that you are going to be infected with error, infected with whatever is going on in the situation. And so the well-advised, there's wisdom. The well-advised are those who are humble enough to seek counsel, guidance, direction from outside, knowing they don't know it all. It's a pastor asking his church to pray with him, asking for guidance, asking for input, whatever the case may be, when it's warranted. It's a husband, even though he's the leader of his home, and many would say, well, just do what you want because, you know, the women should follow. It's a husband saying, I really don't know. Or, this is what I think is best. What do you think? It's about leading from a place of humility in these things. And so, with pride will come contention every single time. Because as soon as I pull out my pride and show it off, then that will evoke the same kind of response in someone else to have to show why they're better. Humility has the opposite effect. Humility will not lead to contention. It cannot. And so we need to be very careful in that. Pride will keep an individual from asking for help or from seeking advice or from learning in those kinds of ways. Flip back in Proverbs to 28. This is a proverb in support of the one we're looking at right now, and then we'll go back to chapter 15 in just a moment. Proverbs 28:25. He that is of a proud heart stirreth up strife, but he that putteth his trust in the Lord shall be made fat. That is, he'll flourish, he'll prosper. Instead of what contention brings, which is poverty, it brings that which is unseemly. It brings that which is the opposite of blessing, of course, and the judgment of God. So the wise individual will cultivate humility rather than pride, and that is a lifelong battle. Lifelong battle. You can think of the times when you have lived with humility and there's less strife. You don't gender strife. But instead, we find ourselves living many times with pride, and that brings about strife in our relationships. It really does. It is enemy number one, if you will. Now, Proverbs 15. Proverbs 15, this is a very familiar one. We've read it probably a couple times already. We looked at it last summer when we were looking at the better, things that are better. Proverbs 15:17. Better is a dinner of herbs where love is than a stalled ox and hatred therewith. A wrathful man stirreth up strife, but he that is slow to anger appeaseth strife. Here we have love and hatred contrasted, followed by the mention of a wrathful man, or one that is angry, one that is bitter, one that stirreth or provokes strife. That's what his anger and his vengeance will lead to. It will lead him to bring everyone down and cause that kind of discord and contention all around him. And you notice it's also contrasted here in verse 18. He says, he that is slow to anger appeaseth strife. So on the other side of it, those that are slow to anger, you're going to quell the strife. If you are able to show patience, even when patience, how do I say this right? Even when patience doesn't seem to be warranted by everything within you, even by those judging from the outside, how did you keep your cool, they might ask. Even in those situations, you will find that it is everything. When we do that, we are able to appease strife. We're able to bring down the temperature or the discord. We're able to cause people to hear once again when they talk to one another, and instead of stirring it up, one that is slow to anger will seek to quiet and end the strife that's around him by being slow to anger, slow to take offense, slow to take the bait to jump into the argument, slow to be part of the discord. So the wise individual will cultivate patience and forbearance rather than wrath. It means that he'll feel the urge to speak, as we talked about with the mouth, don't be rash to speak. He'll feel the urge to speak, but he'll restrain himself. He'll feel the urge to be angry or to be upset because, say, somebody else's beliefs are being, you know, put up as better than his own, or maybe somebody else is not doing what they might be doing. The wise man or woman will be slow to anger in those situations. He'll appease his own strife, the strife of those around him. The last thing you want in a marriage is strife. In the marriage, strife in the home, discord and that kind of a thing. You don't want that in a church. It's unproductive in every single way. Go to chapter 17, and with this idea of being better, chapter 17 follows suit. Verse 1, better is a dry morsel in quietness therewith and in house full of sacrifices with strife. The lesson here is that love, peace, and unity contribute greatly to happiness and contentment, while of course, you know, the bitterness and those kinds of things tends to strife, tends to misery. And it doesn't matter about the riches. And that's the whole point here. Even if one is rich, if all they have is strife and discord and the opposite of harmony in their life and relationships, what good is it? It's better to have very little and have quietness. The quietness here isn't just about noise level. Quietness means peace. It means being able to have a good relationship with those around you. Stay here in chapter 17 and drop down to verse 14. Here he uses some imagery. The beginning of strife is as when one letteth out water. Therefore leave off contention before it be meddled with. This speaks of the danger of beginning of strife. You know, you hear the phrase, nip it in the bud. And, you know, there's a lot of times when you can't even really begin to see the danger of strife at the beginning. Does it seem like a big deal? You know, something's happened, doesn't get addressed. You know, you just kind of sweep it under the rug, don't worry about it. And he says here, though it may seem like a minor matter, it often quickly grows out of control to where it is an overflowing destructive force. So the advice is to leave off contention. Leave off contention. Don't let it fester. Don't even, give it a place in your life. If you can head it off, you'll be better off for it. And the imagery here is as one letting out water. You know, you fill your bathtub up with water, hit the drain, and when you hit the drain, you might hear something, but it doesn't look a whole lot different right away, does it? It seems like a small thing. But what happens? Not very long, and that water's all gone. You know, think about a dam. You know, it starts to just creep over the edge and spill a little bit over. And doesn't seem like much of a danger, but not too long, very long later, that dam spills over and wipes out the town or destroys the homes and lives of people. That's what happens with this kind of a strife, contention. It's very destructive. Even though it may seem incidental and so consequential at first, leave it off. Don't meddle with it in any way. Go down to verse 19 here in chapter 17. He loveth transgression that loveth strife, and he that exalteth his gate seeketh destruction. Two things. First of all, strife is a transgression or sin, and as such, never brings anything that is good. Because it clearly says here, he loveth transgression that loveth strife, therefore strife is a transgression. It's a sin if we are causing that. Now, there is the possibility we can cause that unbeknownst to us. We're imperfect. We say things, do things. But if we know about it, we ought to try to fix it. We ought to want to bring an end to it in any way that we can, because it is a sin. And then secondly, points out that there is the individual that loves strife. He's proud. He's wrathful. He's froward. This individual must love sin because he loves strife. As James chapter 3, verse 16 says, "For where envying and strife is, there is confusion in every evil work." It does not do anything good, as we have said about many of these things. Go to chapter 20, verse number 3. This would be an excellent verse to assign to all of our young people, but especially to our young men as they grow up into adults. "It is an honor for a man to cease from strife, but every fool will be meddling." It is an honor, or it is an honorable thing. It is a mark of a good character when we are able to cease from strife, when we're able to identify and say, "Oh, I didn't mean to do that. I don't want any part of that." Or we're able to identify a situation, "I'm staying far away from that," instead of meddling, as it says here. A fool does that. A fool tries to get in and gets his part, tries to get in and make people even worse because of it. But it's an honor for a man to cease from strife. And the problem is society doesn't understand that and it doesn't recognize that. And instead of saying that it's honorable, society many times will say it's cowardly. We'll say that it's something that we shouldn't do. But the Bible says opposite, that we need to stay away from strife. Does that mean that we don't defend our convictions? At times, yes, when it's appropriate, we do. In the right spirit. We do it in the right spirit. We do it in the right avenue or the right the right place. We do it at the right time. We understand that it is a necessity. It's an act of virtue to prevent, to put to an end this kind of thing. Instead of meddling, don't meddle where strife is. It will not help in any way, shape, or form. Go to chapter 25 and verse number 8. There's just a few more after this one here and we'll finish up. Proverbs 25 and verse number 8. "Go not hastily, go not forth hastily to strive, lest thou know not what to do in the end thereof, when thy neighbor hath put thee to shame." Very sound advice, very sound wisdom. You can just imagine from this that Solomon could think back over his life once he had received all the wisdom that he had and like, "Man, there was a lot of times I wish I would have never got involved in a situation. I wish I would have never assumed that whatever that person across the table from me was doing was my business and opened my mouth. I wish I would have never got involved in that situation or done these things because I didn't know how it was going to end." How many times do we jump in so hastily before we can ever assess a situation, before we can ever figure out what are these persons' motives or where is the truth at? There's something to be said, of course, for being reserved in that way. So go not hastily to strive, because you may not know what the situation is. If you don't measure and temper your words and your actions, you're going to end up being put to shame, with condemnation, rebuke falling upon you. And it will be of no profit or no benefit. It'll turn to your hurt, turn to your destruction. You don't really know what's going to transpire. You may think you know, or you may not care and just get involved. And so you need to be very careful. Wisdom dictates that one does not go forth without necessary cause in due consideration. We need to be very careful that we go forth in that manner. We duly consider, do I need to be involved here? Duly consider, am I in control of my emotions? Am I responding with humility? Am I measuring my words? And if the answer is no, we need to stay out. We need to stay out of those things altogether and make sure that we are measuring those things, because as soon as we get in, it can turn on us in a moment. And then it turns out our neighbor is vindicated and what they were doing. And the shame is on us, and we simply don't want that. Chapter 26, verse 17. There's a great life lesson to be learned in that proverb. One that would save us a lot of heartache. A lot of rebuke, a lot of difficulty, if we'll take it to heart. Proverbs 26, verse 17, "He that passeth by and meddleth with strife, belonging not to him, is like one that taketh a dog by the ears." What business do you have taking a dog by the ears? You don't really control a dog by grabbing it by the ears. You don't really play with a dog by grabbing it by the ears. In fact, all you do by grabbing the dog by his ears is taking needless danger unto yourself by messing with him in a way that really isn't good. And that's the same way. You pass by, you meddle with strife belonging not to him. Again, it's very similar to chapter 25, verse 8. You're involved in a situation that you don't belong in, and all you do is bring needless danger upon yourself, interject yourself, and it doesn't work. Now, there may be times when you need to, and God will lead you to do that with the right response. But understand that we don't need to do that in this life. We need to cultivate meekness rather than a contentious spirit. And a meek and humble individual will pass on, realizing that it's not about him, not about the situation, not about what he has to add or do. And sometimes we just like to feel important, let's be honest. We like to feel like we could fix something or make something. We want to be the star, so to speak, that brings, you know, some kind of resolution or that stands out. Resist those thoughts every time. Do not act on them, because it will only lead to putting ourselves in needless places of danger. That's why churches don't have any business getting involved in other churches' business. We don't need to walk by and say, well, you need to do this better, whatever. It's just bringing about danger upon ourselves needlessly, because we have no authority over them. And so we need to be very careful. Two more. Chapter 29, verse number 22. And we have skipped a few. I don't feel like we left a lot of meat on the bone, but there's several if you want to go back and look through the Proverbs. Chapter 29 and verse number 22. "An angry man stirreth up strife, and a furious man aboundeth in transgression." An angry man is one who possesses strong feelings of hostility or opposition, and is very similar to the hatred that we spoke of a few minutes ago. But this person will take it from feeling hatred inside to being furious, and or that anger turning into fury, which means action or activity in his life. He'll be full of angry energy, resulting in a progression that will, of course, bring about strife, the bounded transgression in his life, and it will, of course, be a very negative outcome. Last one, chapter 30 and verse 33. This one's a good one to end on and to stick in your mind, because he uses, again, an analogy. It's one of those kind of proverbs. Chapter 30, verse 33, the first half of this proverb is going to present two absolute certainties that paint a picture for us that we can relate to. Chapter 30, verse number 33. "Surely the churning of milk bringeth forth butter, and the wringing of the nose bringeth forth blood." So the two pictures put before us are, if you churn milk hard enough, long enough, you're going to get butter. I mean, it is a natural result of the process at hand. If you punch somebody in the nose, there's going to be blood. It's a natural result in how our bodies work. Those things are going to happen. And so then, in relation to that, he says, "So the forcing of wrath bringeth forth strife." The irritating, the provoking of wrath, rising a passion within someone else, provoking them or pushing them in some form or fashion. You know, using something that you know gets under their skin, or something that you know gets them angry. And, you know, we may not do this a lot as far as our church family is concerned, but what about who you know best? You know, your wife, your husband. You know how to get under their skin. You know how to provoke. There's a reason why Ephesians tells fathers not to provoke their children. Because we know. We've watched them every day since they were born. We know what gets them. And we can, because of their immaturity, push them into a state of excitement or emotional response that would put them in a bad position. We need to be very careful in that, because they don't know how to balance and handle it as yet. But the one who possesses heavenly wisdom does not purposely say or do things that are going to irritate or entice or excite people into strife. And so all of these proverbs, when we put them together, we learn that hatred, pride, wrath, frowardness, and a spirit of contentiousness or anger, they provoke, you know, they incite, they cause strife to come. Paul instructs us in Philippians 2 in verse number 3, let nothing be done through strife or vainglory. But let each esteem other higher than themselves. That's what we ought to be about. Instead of trying to strive among one another and cause that discord, we ought to strive together against the world, but we ought not to strive against each other in discord. The one who possesses the wisdom that is from above will avoid these things. Not perfectly, because none of us are perfect, but as part of our character or attributes, we will avoid these things as much as we possibly can. And we'll identify them when we've done wrong, and we'll get them right, and we'll stop the process involved. And there's been a lot of church conflicts and splits over the years in different churches that would have benefited from this kind of thought and study. Our own lives, our own relationships would benefit from this too. So take from this tonight our responsibility to act wisely in how we respond, how we measure, or we should always measure our response and those kinds of things. When you see the strife rising up, do everything you can to quell it. That's what a wise person would do. All right, we'll be dismissed. A word of prayer. We're thankful for the Lord allowing us to have this.